Welcome to Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. My name is Camden Busey. I'm the pastor of Hope Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Grays Lake, Illinois. I'm back here in the new year. We're delighted to be with you. We have our regulars. We have Jim Cassidy, who is the pastor at South Austin OPC down in Austin, Texas. Welcome back, Jim. It's good to have you with us.
As always, Camden, good to be here.
We also have our good buddy, Jeff Waddington, who's stated supply at Knox OPC. Got to love that name, Knox OPC in Lansdowne, Pennsylvania. Welcome back, Jeff. It's great to have you too.
Oh, ditto.
Today we don't have an agenda, and that's intentional. So we like to, once in a while, get together and talk about issues, talk about things that are on our minds or things that are coming up, and just roll with it. And so we don't have a guest, and I might have a few prompts up my sleeve if we get stalled, but that doesn't ever seem to be a problem for us. And so we'll begin the new year with just speaking about new things, and oftentimes there are also some smaller items that maybe wouldn't work for an entire episode, but they get stacked up somewhere and forgotten and piled up, whether they be books or current event issues. And sometimes it's nice to just take one episode and have no agenda and just see where it goes, and we can get to a lot of those things. So we hope you enjoy it. So we'll see how things are. So in the new year, brothers, let's start this way. This is old school, kind of the way we started episode one. What are you reading? What's going on? What has been piling up on your nightstand or your spare bookshelf that you just haven't been able to get to, and what are you hoping to fire off this new year?
Wow. Jeff, you want to go first? Because you usually
Yeah, he's the master. Jeff gets through the books sometimes.
Huh. Okay.
You and I, Jim, get stacks
but
and piles
stay
up.
There. Yeah. Collect
dust. Yeah, need to read this.
Okay, I'm just going to rattle and stop me if something catches your interest.
Okay, I'll be back in half an hour after.
Funny guy. Well, Jim Gerritsen has a new book, Thoughts on Preaching and Pastoral Ministry, about J.W. Alexander. Another one of his books on the old Princeton greats that I'm looking forward to reading. Calvin's Sermons on Titus, the new issue of the Westminster Journal.
That thing's enormous.
No.
You seen how fat that is?
Ginormous.
I know. It's like a double issue. There's
and
some
the
good stuff in there.
The section got real big too.
Yeah,
it's true. They got a lot of.
Yeah, Brandon's been up to, soliciting all these reviews. He's, we were joking with him. We talked to him last time that he's kind of like herding cats. Trying to get reviews and people to actually turn them in is difficult. But he's been editing those book reviews for a while, and
he's done a great job.
Brandon Crow, that is. And he's doing a great job. So, yeah, it's an enormous issue.
Yep. Then The Miracles of Jesus by Vern Poitras, his latest book.
That's good.
Nice. I just picked that one up myself. Yeah.
He gave me a signed copy for Christmas. Or Thanksgiving. My birthday.
Oh, that's nice.
It was my birthday, yeah. It may have been the first time where I hadn't beaten him to the punch and had a copy already. Then I've got, In the Beginning Was the Word. That's a new book by Mark Knoll on the Bible in America.
Ooh. I need to read that.
Al Mohler's We Cannot Be Silent. So then there's the Ecumenical Edwards. And then I've got a bunch of new books on Charles I, who was the king when the Civil War broke out in England. And it's, the historical context of the Westminster Assembly. Then I have Bobby George's Conscience and Its Enemies, Confessing the Impassable God. I picked up the Study Quran. It's a new translation of the Quran with study notes.
Wow.
I want to familiarize myself with the Quran and also the various interpretations of it.
Sure.
I'm working on several book reviews, one on Guy Waters' commentary on the Book of Acts, Oliver Crisp's Jonathan Edwards Among the Theologians, Thomas Oden's A Change of Heart, Ryan McGraw's A Heavenly Dictionary, which is about John Owen's Theology of Worship. And then I have a book on Jonathan Edwards and participation, the Doctrine of Theosis, which I'm reviewing for the Westminster Journal as well. Plus, I have a whole ton of other books as well, but those give you some idea of where I'm at. I just got, for my logo software, I just picked up a Daryl Bach's Biblical Theology of Luke Acts, because I'm preaching through Luke and Acts.
Well, that's handy. So when you're looking at a particular text, are you easily able just to bring the appropriate sections up?
Yep.
That's great.
Oh, it's nice. It's very nice. Oh, yeah, I thoroughly enjoy the logo software.
Oh, I do too. I use it all the time.
I carry it on my phone, my tablet, my laptop, my desktop computer. So everywhere, it's ubiquitous. It's ubiquitous. I'll leave the theological.
Are you becoming a Lutheran?
I knew you were thinking that. That's where I was going. It really is helpful to be able to call up things, you know, on the fly even.
Yeah.
You're having a conversation, and I can pull up my smartphone and go into Logos and find it. And, you know, cite it, you know, that kind of thing. Well, it's helpful.
I just used Logos to create another Bible reading plan. I've been using that for the last couple of years, where it's I open up my Logos and it has my daily readings in there. And it's nice just to make sure that I'm getting through the Bible, you know, once or twice a year. And I've also put reading plans in there for other things. Like, I've read all of Hodges' Systematic Theology through Logos on a scheduled plan. I've read the first two volumes of Muller's Post-Reformation Reform Dogmatics. I've read some Voss books in there, Pauline Eschatology, etc. So it's really handy and useful, and you can create custom reading plans, not just for the Bible, but for anything that's in Logos.
Right. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
I still haven't figured out how to get that up and running, but
yeah,
that's more because of my administrative incompetence than anything else.
Administrative incompetence. Yeah. What have you been reading, Jim, or what do you aspire to read?
I aspire to read everything, but I only have one brain, so I could just do one book at a time. But I've been working on a book review for Darren Sumner's book, Karl Barton, The Incarnation, Christology, and the Humility of God. So I'm writing a pretty lengthy review at this point on it, and it's a fantastic book for coming into a greater and deeper understanding of Barth's Christology, what he's doing, the background against which he is doing it, some of the things he's responding to and reacting against. So it's a very learned volume, and it's Darren's PhD dissertation at Princeton Seminary, which he did under McCormick and Hunziker. Ooh. I don't know who was his direct advisor, but he's definitely influenced by both men.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, he would be to some degree, but I mean, would both of them be pleased with the work, do you anticipate?
I don't know. It's hard to say. The way I read Sumner is he is basically within the McCormick tradition. Although he does, I'm reading between the lines, it seems as if he's offering perhaps a corrective or a change of course, with regard to McCormick. And so I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to say exactly how those men would respond, but I do know that Hunziker has a blurb on the back. But as far as I could tell, as far as I could see here, there is no blurb from McCormick. So
not a fan of Paul Molnar?
I don't see Molnar on there either. I think Molnar would be uncomfortable enough. But it's so hard to say. These debates are so intricate, and different nuances are coming out all the time. Every time these guys write, so it's kind of
hard. It's a lively field.
It's a lively discussion, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely always changing and moving. But I would perhaps be more inclined towards taking McCormick and moving him in a more consistent direction, whereas the way I read the current discussion, it seems as if maybe there's a little backing off of going in that, direction where initially it seemed like the discussion was going. with a consistent view of Barthes' actualism, whereby there is a truly an ontological constitution by way of act, or right. divine constitution of the divine being by way of an act of grace, which I still read Barthes that way. I think that the current trend would be best served if we were to really let Barthes out of the cage. Let Barthes be Barthes. Let him roar with all of his profound insights that he does have. Insights that are profound. I disagree with them, but I do think they are profound insights, and I think that oftentimes he gets muzzled in the current discussion. But anyway, that wait for the review on that. The other thing that I'm reading is I've been continuing to work my way through Bavinck's Reformed Dogmatics.
Oh, yeah.
And there is – I just posted a small blog post back before the weekend began.
Yeah, the Trinity.
On the Trinity, mm-hmm. Bavinck on the Trinity on Reform Forum, so people could go check that out. I realize that the worst time that you can post a blog post is at the end of the week, like Friday night. Like nobody's going to read it. But
or during the holiday.
Or the holidays or
Friday night during the holiday.
Yeah, I always get my inspiration at the worst times. But anyway,
that's I looked at my RSS reader and I said, oh, what's this article? And I go, oh, it's on Reform Forum. oh, Jim wrote it.
Oh, that's my website. Look at that. Yeah. So go check that out. Bavinck, I'm just blown away by Bavinck on the Trinity. I just think it's so rich. So insightful, and perhaps because I've already read Van Til on the Trinity and I've read secondary literature on Van Til on the Trinity, namely Lane Tipton's dissertation on the Trinity in Van Til, which is a great dissertation. But anyway, so I could commend, of course, Bavinck and his section on the Trinity. If you haven't read Bavinck or you're not ready to start trekking your way through the Reformed Dogmatics, just go ahead and pick up Volume 2 and read through. It's not a real lengthy section on the Trinity. It's really rich, really deep, and you could see where Van Til gets his kind of inspiration from and the way in which Van Til's apologetic gets developed in light of the Trinity and the doctrine of Trinity. So I've also just begun to read Chad Van Dixern's five-volume set here.
For real?
Westminster Confession, but I just read the first volume, which is introduction to the set. I'm not going to work my way systematically through all of the minutes, not yet anyway, but I did read volume one just recently, and it very, very good, very, very helpful. And then lastly, what I'm working on as well on my bedstand is Daryl Hart's book, what is it again? The one from Billy Graham to Sarah Palin.
Yeah. Did an interview with him on that a few years ago.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it's an older book. And actually, it went
on sale. Well, not really. I mean,
it went on sale, so I picked it up.
2010 or so, maybe.
Yeah. It's older. It's kind of older because it does take, it capitalizes on Sarah Palin's name when she was running for vice president. But. And in that sense, it's kind of has an outdated feel to it, although it's not, the material, the content isn't at all, because what he's seeking to do is show the way that evangelicals have betrayed American conservatism, and makes a pretty provocative historical case for that. And I found it extremely interesting. And like Daryl Hart, I don't agree with everything, but when he kind of exposes some of the evangelical trends that you see and kind of provokes you to think, hey, is that really a very good trend? He's very good at doing
it. I was going to say, when I read the book, I mean, it's a very, very good reminder that basically evangelicals are transformationalists, which means they are not conservative they're not conservative by orientation.
That's right.
So the combination of conservative politics and transformationalist evangelical theology does not seem to be like oil and water, what he's arguing.
Yeah. That's exactly right. So if you go back to the founding constitutional documents of our country, they're not kind of distinctly Christian, right? I mean, influenced by deism and such. So
well, yeah.
So there's
Thomas Jefferson.
Right. Right. So, you know, when
he had no involvement in the writing of the Constitution.
The Constitution, right. Yeah.
But when you see that there's – well, Franklin did, of course, and Franklin was not even a deist. I think he was atheist at the end of the day. But, you know, but when you kind of see what evangelicals are trying to do, namely, you know, transform the culture kind of to make it Christian or to Christianize it, you know, oftentimes that's kind of couched in conservative terms. Let's get back to the, you know, Christian roots of our the founding of our country. And while we don't want to deny the Christian testimony of the, you know, early settlers and such here, at the same time, you know, our Constitution is not a distinctly Christian document by any stretch. It's an Enlightenment document. So anyway,
we're going to get a lot of emails, Jim.
Well, it's a mix. The documents do have a Christian ingredients in them. The separation of powers clearly comes from Presbyterian polity.
That's helpful.
Because the father of the Constitution was taught at Princeton. And it's based upon it's based upon the idea that we're sinners, not angels, and so there has to be checks and balances.
Sure.
It's not a purely Enlightenment. It's a mix. It's like today. You've got people in government who are Christian and people who aren't.
Right.
So the same. You take that dynamic and trace it all the way back.
Well, right. And there wouldn't be one Enlightenment position either.
Correct.
That's right. It's an eclectic phenomenon. You know. So you have. You know. There is a Christian influence that's there, and yet at the same time the Constitution doesn't, let's say, establish a distinctly Christian position,
theocracy
or theocracy or religion, right? There's no establishment of a
the fact is it didn't outlaw states having established churches.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. It only made federal it outlawed the federal government having a state church.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
right.
There were state churches on the state level for years after the Constitution was ratified.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So it's a mix. There are some better books coming out now that don't argue for pure Enlightenment and don't argue for pure Puritan background to our current, you know, the constitutional system. I am one of those guys who's a strict constructionist as with regard to the Declaration of Independence and Constitution. But you're right. It's a document. They're documents that reflect both Enlightenment and some Christian elements involved in there. And that shouldn't be surprising because the Enlightenment is parasitic on the Christian faith.
Sure. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
In many ways. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to remember, I do have a book on my shelf in my study at the church on the religious views of the founders. And it's by a gentleman who argues for not deism or Christian. I think he goes something like theistic enlightenment. I forget the exact term he uses. But anyways, it's an interesting topic. So we're doing. What are you reading, Camden?
Oh my! Well, I have a lot of books on my shelf that I want to read that I have not yet read. But I have a priority.
All of us.
You know, I've also checked some books out of the library just the last month or so. I've done a bit of reading of all sorts of different books outside of the theological sphere, but. At the moment, I'm directing my thoughts and trying to spend my academic and intellectual energies outside of doing sermon preparation and Sunday school materials on trying to develop my Catholic theology knowledge. I'm working on my Rahner book, which is due to the publisher in manuscript form in April. So a lot of work there. Most of that is cutting and rewriting. But after Rahner, you know, I feel like I've got a decent grasp on Rahner that I want to move to some other bigger figures. So I've really been beefing up my library in terms of Catholic thinkers, especially right now on Hans Urs von Balthasar.
So yes.
I'm reading a bit on von Balthasar, the secondary literature. I'm also getting closer to piecing together his trilogy of 14 or 15 volumes. the trilogy is divided into three, you know, types of books. So he has the Glory of the Lord, and he has the Theodrama and the Theologic. And those three sections all correspond to the traditional three transcendentals. So, you know, the good, the true, the beautiful. And so what Balthasar is doing is really fascinating. I haven't read as much or about him, and haven't read much of him now, but diving in, it's just thoroughly fascinating to me.
I remember when I worked in the Westminster Seminary bookstore, and libraries would order his books. I always thought they look amazingly like the Church Dogmatics of Barth.
They do, kind of.
The cover art. And he is influenced by Barth in some sense, isn't he?
Or they corresponded a lot. I don't know if we'd call them friends, but perhaps they were. But they had a lot of correspondence and interaction with one another. And Rahner touches on Barth a little bit, but it's not a main feature. But
von Balthasar is one of the few that Barth didn't get like super offended about his criticisms of Barth. And even today, the idea that that Barth kind of moved from dialectic to analogy is still being kind of kicked around some. And in fact, it seems to have, among some scholars in Barth scholars, have taken to this idea, although it's been revised. It's, you know, von Balthasar wants to make Barth almost a crypto Catholic, you know, having adopted an analogian. They're wanting to qualify it and say, well, yeah, there is a move towards analogy in Barth's thought, but it's not of the Catholic sort, you know, which is probably right.
That's always a topic I've been thinking it would be a fascinating one for this program to talk about analogy and the analogia entis. It would be an interesting thing to speak about in general, and then specifically with relation to Barth and even von Balthasar.
I mean, it's a the analogy of being is so big in Western philosophy, and of course early on it entered into even Christian theology, and then to bring it up to date and look at contemporary theologians would be a great thing. Just know that you, when you dive into that topic, if you even touch on Thomas Aquinas, there's so much literature there and disagreement.
Oh, of course.
On what he meant by analogy.
Mm.
So it's a rich topic. It just is would take a lot of work.
Yeah, perhaps we can do an introduction at some point, because I don't believe we've touched on it. Of course, it's come up in issues of Doctrine of God and some of our Vantillian episodes, but not in terms of a full episode with all of our attention directed upon it.
Right.
Balthasar's on the shelf. I have a lot of books on Vatican II. I made some friends at CTSA, friendly acquaintances at the Catholic Theological Society of America, and so I've been working with them and emailing them, pestering them for book recommendations and how to go about, piecing together a respectable library so that I can get a good understanding of contemporary Catholicism. So I have some books on Catholic social thought, several other books on various topics, Vatican II related. I've got Gutierrez on liberation theology, some other things like that I hope to get to at some point. But for now, it's kind of diving head in on Balthasar when I have the opportunity. Then down the road, maybe some other big Catholic thinkers like Skillebeeks and who knows, some others. That's kind of a lifetime project. We'll see.
Hans Küng, even though he's
I've read some Küng. You should read his memoirs.
Yes, I've seen them. I They're pretty hefty. How many volumes
two
are
of
there
them.
Now?
They're huge, but they're two. And just his own his personality is funny. I mean, it's entertaining. They're entertaining reads. And so to read his own take and from from his own pen, his memoirs are pretty fascinating. You're just looking for, you know, you want to, if you want to smile while you read Hans Küng's
nice.
Memoirs.
Yeah, it's nice to do that, smile while reading.
To some degree. You know, there could be so many dry things in the theological world, but it's fun, even with people you disagree, to read somebody who has a strong opinion and has some skill writing and is willing to share that. And then added to that, Hans Küng's kind of history of, you know, conflict with people in power in the Catholic Church and his own views on all this stuff. And it just all blends together to make for quite the entertaining read.
Very nice.
What, other than reading, do you brothers have any sort of Edwardsian type New Year's resolutions? You resolve to do anything this year? Anything you're going to cut back on or anything you want to start? Any new habits or procedures?
You know. Yeah, I'm having bariatric surgery, Lord willing, next month. So
did you resolve to do that? I mean,
resolve to do that and to hopefully experience the weight loss that comes with that. Yeah. And I've been doing physical therapy. I will be doing it 3 times a week. So
right. A lot of changes having, with that.
Mm-hmm. Plus my own exercise regimen that they give me for at home.
Mm-hmm.
The neuropathy may not go away, but the weight will help dealing with the neuropathy, the loss of weight. So yes. that's a big deal.
Yeah, we're praying for you.
It means I have to take these horse pill vitamins every 6 times a day for the rest of my life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's
6 times a day?
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Can you like grind them up and drink them and slam them all?
You can do that, but the ones that I have are actually like sweet tarts, you know, the sour.
So you're complaining about eating candy? No, you have to.
Actually, I'm not complaining. It's just that it's an expense. You have to buy them.
Yeah,
they don't grow on trees outside my yard in my yard here.
Oh my!
So that's I'm looking forward to that. I've lost 20 pounds.
Hey, that's great.
In preparation for. Mm-hmm. Or that, and I tell you, when I've done the PT, the physical therapy, I walk out of there after about an hour of that, very limber. Especially the bike, the stationary mm-hmm. bike. I couldn't believe how limber I was the first time I walked out of PT. I hadn't felt that limber in years, so it's been a good experience.
That's good. That's good.
Looking forward to that.
Mm. You know, one thing I started to do this year is to write first thing when I wake up before I do any messaging, like emails or texts, or before I do any news reading, or before I do any social media. And I like to exercise first thing in the morning, so I get up rather early, and I go out and I run or ride my bike, and very soon going to get into swimming regularly, but I found that when I start my day with the journal and I write with my hand, you know, with a pen, you know, on paper, whatever's on my mind, a lot of times the journal I'm working through issues or I'm interacting with ideas that I've been reading or working with, or it might just be kind of like thinking about the things I have to do for the day or talking through something, who knows, whatever's on my mind. I try to organize that and get it down on the page first thing in the morning, and then I'm getting better trying also to do it right before bed. So if I keep that journal up there and it's always at hand, I'm finding that my thoughts are slowing down in a good way. Not that I'm not thinking fast or sharply, but all the scatteredness, you know, that is encouraged by Twitter and the fast moving media culture. I'm finding that I'm seemingly encountering some sort of like a mental rehabilitation.
I was going to suggest that for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Jim. But you know, it's nice to you know have that life of the mind, and we should cultivate that as Christians, and especially as pastors and as scholars, trying to encourage deep thought, not scattered thought, and right. To be able to sustain an argument and to work through difficult issues. We can't be so foolish as to imagine that we can just feed our minds a diet of television and sports and, you know, fast food media, whether that's tweets or Facebook posts or whatever, all day long. I still use those things and I enjoy them. They have their place. They're very useful. But if we do that all the time, you're training certain types of muscles and behaviors in your mind and your brain that are not conducive to the types of things that are enduring and the types of things that are, I think, more important and more lasting and effective for God's kingdom. So that's kind of one of my big resolutions, and it's been going well so far. So quick gains. Yeah.
Jim, any resolutions you got?
Yeah, I've resolved not to make any more resolutions.
It's the classic joke, right?
I've given them up. Well, it's kind of like at Lent, you know, I've given up the church calendar for Lent. But,
yeah,
I don't have any resolutions, but this past week we were, Glenn Clary and I went down to the Church Planters Conference in San Antonio for the OPC, and John Shaw, who is our general secretary for Home Missions, was there, spoke. Mark Sumter, who is the new regional home missionary of our presbytery, also spoke. And we're excited that Al Tricarico, who is a former missionary to Uganda, him and his family just relocated to the Philadelphia area to be the associate general secretary for Home Missions.
Yeah.
Joined John Shaw in his labors there. So we're really excited to see what's going on. I had a chance to meet new church planters around the OPC and some seminary students who are going through school or internships and being prepared for taking on calls to be organizing pastors. So really cool to see. Also, by the way, a host of guys who I had never met before, young guys.
That's good.
I'm really encouraged to see, you know, the next generation of men who are coming up, as it were, through the ranks, to see them take these calls and, you know, excited to see what the OPC is going to do in the years mm-hmm. to come in terms of church planting. So in our own presbytery here, we have a number of things kind of, you know, in the cooker. You know, we have some potential new works in the Houston area, Memorial area, as well as the southwest part of Houston and in the Waco area. Something's brewing there. So if you know anyone in the Waco, Texas area, let us know about it. So we're excited to see what the Lord's doing.
They have a compound for sale there or no?
I was wondering if they were going to name the new church David Koresh OPC.
Yeah, there's a new Wacko in Waco, and it's not David Koresh.
See, I always wish that there would be some sort of post-structuralist French thinkers who would create a cult called the Branch Derridians. That's a bad joke.
Philosophical groan.
Oh. Jim, we just prayed for you. Let me move away from that joke quickly. We just prayed for you in the congregational prayer because you were, you know, the leading story in the Home Missions today. But a lot of good things going on at South Austin. I was thankful to read those things and those updates. But you know, what are you doing in terms of what are your thoughts? Maybe you have some lessons learned about advertising and just kind of maybe we could revisit a little bit of the church planter life, because I know I've been talking to some other pastors in my area that are looking at doing more advertising and outreach and that sort of thing. What's been working for you? I know things are different in different locations and it's all in the Lord's hands to bless. But what have you tried and what seems to be working?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I don't know if anything is really working, but we are doing our best to you know, just let
you're growing.
Folks know. Yeah.
Is it word of mouth, you think, or just
it's mostly at this point, I think it's word of mouth, it's social media. We had one family come to us because we advertise on Facebook. They were going through Facebook scrolling, you know, doing that thing, mm-hmm. and up popped an ad for our church, and they hadn't heard that we were here. They heard we were here, and they came and visited us, and they've stayed, and they're going to be entering into the membership class.
I've done that before here. Just I want to let listeners know it's a good idea. I've heard that there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, and after you've kind of reached all that, it might not be as effective, but I think we paid $24 and probably reached 2,000 people. And these were targeted people because I went in to the ad and I said, I want to target people within 15 miles of my church. I want them to be of, you know, this age, you know, 17, 18 and older, whatever, just to start with. And I want them to have liked one of the following pages. And I just listed a ton of stuff like seminaries, ministries, other things that are in the same kind of vein as the OP. And I reached like, and I said, and please do not, don't advertise to anyone who's already liked our page. So we're not reaching people that are already attending or know about us. And it was working. I mean, we reached about 2,000 people. I don't recall how many actually attended, but there were a lot of people that liked the page that now know about us. We did receive a new like from one of our current members. So, because she had not liked the page already. So I realized, well, it's working because people that do attend received the advertisement. So
sure.
That was 20, great. Like 20 bucks, 24 bucks.
Yeah. It's cost effective. You know, very, very good way of doing things. The other thing that we're thinking about, I mean, I've done some door to door kind of not knocking on doors, but door hangers where I take a brochure and, you know, hang them on the doors in the neighborhood and all that, but, not so much fruit from there. The next thing we're thinking about doing actually though, is starting a radio ministry. The problem is that we need about 10 grand to do it for the year. We're trying to find 10 grand.
To buy the time? At the station.
Time, it would be a half hour on Sunday mornings, and it's an FM secular station. So
what?
But they have a 6-hour time slot on Sunday mornings that they've dedicated to churches playing their sermons.
Did they have like Christians working there, or is this just a pure revenue ploy?
No. I think they do have Christians, but also see the radio station started out as a small community radio station, and so their practice from the very beginning of starting their business was to reach out to the community. And one of the ways that they did that was by opening up airtime for churches.
This part of the way that they can keep Austin weird by having some strange views broadcast on Sunday mornings. I mean,
certainly it's gotten weirder if we get on there. But you know, we're hoping to that. And, you know, it's the hopes that we can reach, you know, both unchurched, underchurched, those that would be outside our circles so that, you know, people will know we're there and such. So, a lot of that's been going on. A lot of people have been telling folks about our church, and that's been exciting. So the Lord's been gracious. Part of it is that Austin is a growing area, a tremendously growing area, and so we're getting a lot of folks who are moving into the area who are looking for a Reformed church, and they hear about us, and they come and visit. So, you know, it's not really that we're doing – you know, it's not like there's a revival going on here necessarily, although the Lord is always reviving us. But, you know, there is, though, kind of the demographic of the area in terms of the economics and people moving in that has really dusted along the way. So, yeah.
Well, that's good. And hopefully the Lord continues to bless there, and he'll always bless his people. And we just pray that it keeps growing, and that you're encouraged. I was encouraged by reading the news. So
we are exceedingly encouraged. And the congregation, I can't say enough about the congregation here. Their support of us has been overwhelming and encouraging. They're standing behind us and holding us up in prayer and keeping us supported financially in a way that's very generous, and we're very thankful for that. And we're able to not focus on those things, so we can focus. My family and I can focus upon reaching out and doing the work of the ministry. So we're encouraged. Yeah.
That's good. Yesterday, I spoke with Daryl Hart. We did a brief little, well, I guess it wasn't brief, but we did a Reformed Media Review where we spoke about Awakening of the Evangelical Mind, which is a book by Owen Strand. Have you brothers seen that book?
I have it on my shelf.
Seen it, but I haven't read it.
That's one I actually read. I have that, and I read that, and then immediately afterward, I went and read Marsden's History of Fuller Seminary, which was fascinating.
It was a great book.
It was. He has all these surveys in the back where he talks to different classes, you know, different eras of students who were influenced, and then had them list who the influential professors were. And it's interesting to see how that changes. It's also interesting to see how the different classes' views about things changed over time in terms of their views of inerrancy or premarital sex or homosexuality or you name it, all sorts of other things, ecumenicity, you know, all that type of stuff. And it's fascinating to see those statistics. I was just dying to see if there might be some update. Maybe we could persuade some enterprising graduate student to carry on Dr. Marsden's work and update us on the statistics of Fuller alumni to see how things have progressed in the years since that book was published. But
you know what might
30 some years old now.
Yeah. You know what might even be more interesting is to see somebody do something like that, even if it were maybe Marsden himself on Westminster Seminary.
Well, I would like a book like that on Westminster, but Westminster alumni were asked these same questions. That's part of the study in the back.
Interesting.
Yeah. You can compare.
Yeah, right.
But it would be interesting to have an update. I would absolutely love a history of Westminster Seminary, you know, like in that style. Yeah. Marsden could write it.
It's one of those books I read, shortly after getting married, 20-some years ago.
Mm.
And I thought about it. I said, every seminary – now, Southern Baptist, you know, Southern Seminary in Louisville has a book similar that came out a few years ago for their 150th anniversary.
It'd be interesting, though, to read one about Westminster that wasn't, you know, direct – it wasn't on an occasion, perhaps, or wasn't sponsored by the seminary.
Right.
Or anything like that. Not to say that Marsden or scholars of his sort, and he's a first rate. Not that they would be swayed, that they would be tempted not to write, right. You know, a book that needed to be
Except
written.
Marsden did.
It'd be
do
fascinating.
His, it was
yeah,
officially
the Fuller was on the 40th anniversary, wasn't it?
Yeah, they asked him to do the book.
Right.
Yeah.
So, that kind of work for Westminster would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Did you see the book review that Hart did in the New Horizons on Marsden's new book?
Yeah, yes.
Not yet. Is it in the latest issue?
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
I have that book.
I'll go read it.
It looks very interesting on 50s Enlightenment, kind of what, almost a autobiography, basically, mm-hmm. of when Marsden was young. Talking about the gatekeepers of culture,
mm-hmm.
Protestant liberalism, you know, and et cetera.
That'd be a good volume to read.
When I was young.
Sing it for us.
A super tramp stuck in my head. It seemed that life was so wonderful. A miracle.
What are you preaching on these days, Camden?
Well,
Jeff
I just
had
started.
Said that he was preaching on Luke Acts, and what about you?
I'm doing cultural exegesis, you know, so Star Wars this month.
How interesting.
No, for Christmas time, I did a brief series on you know, Christ's birth and different passages in there, but I'm back to my series in Mark, so I'm on Mark 15 now, so I'll be finishing Mark soon. That's in the mornings, and then in the evenings, I just began a series on 2 Peter.
Nice.
So I've already preached 1 Peter here, and looking forward now. 1 Peter, Mark, and 2 Peter are kind of a nice little unit that's taken us some time, but working on that, and we'll see where that takes us after we finish 2 Peter. And then on Sunday school, I know you didn't ask this, but Sunday school, I'm doing the Doctrine of Man, so I'm trying to take my, you know, I taught at Mid-America last semester, the anthropology class.
Yeah, how did
so
that go?
It went really well. I really enjoyed it thoroughly. You know, I'm leaning a lot on, you know, my own having taken the class, but it was thoroughly fascinating. I enjoyed it. The students were spectacular. They were great. It's a really good school, and they have a very sharp focus on training men for gospel ministry, and they do a lot of really wonderful things to encourage that. So Mid-America down in Dyer, Indiana, it's just across the border from Illinois, and it was really great. So I really enjoyed that. I have to mail in my final grades, which I have them computed, but I need to do that today, actually. And I've adjusted that class, or I'm reworking it for to be suitable for the adult Sunday school class here.
Nice.
It's actually harder. I was telling my congregation that. And people might not think that up front, but I think in some ways it's more difficult to teach an adult Sunday school class than a seminary class. Again, in some ways, because on certain topics, because you need to condense and get the main point across with in an adult Sunday school class, but in a way that's faithful to the actual material. But in the seminary, you're a little more free, or you have the option to kind of deliver a little bit of the bread factory and not just the bread. You know, right. You can kind of bring the elements in there, so-and-so says this, or so-and-so says this, or you don't have to digest it as much. And so you can get a little bit lazy doing that, just kind of throwing stuff out there instead of actually bringing the digested, you know, product.
Right.
But
sure.
But that's what's going on. I hope really good things. I'm enjoying it. The ministry's great. You know, it always has its challenges, but we got a great group of people here, and they receive the preaching well. And I'm excited about the new series, both the sermon series and the Sunday school. So. It's going well.
Good. Good.
What's going on at Knox, Jeff?
Well, as you already heard, I recently finished up the Roman series. Took a little less than a year.
Seven? I thought 7 years.
Nah.
And then you were going to, and then on the next Sunday, when everyone is wondering, what is he going to preach on now? We've been in Romans for 7 years. And then you say, brothers and sisters, let's turn to Romans chapter 1, verse 1.
All over again.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no. It took a little less than a year. I actually haven't gone back and counted the number of sermons, but so now we're doing Luke Acts.
It's pretty amazing you got through it in a year.
Well, you know, I try to preach thought chunks, if you may
right.
put it that way, rather than that way it keeps it more interesting, I think.
Yeah, I've heard it said. I don't know who said it. I'm sure many people have, but sometimes people could take such small portions of scripture in their sermons, they end up preaching the words of God and not the word of God.
Yeah. It's, you know, everybody, of course, who's familiar with the preaching through Romans thinks of Martin Lloyd-Jones.
Yeah,
right.
Right. Right.
And how long he took. Now, admittedly, he preached through Romans, not on Sunday. He preached through Romans, I believe in his Friday evening service at Westminster Chapel. Over many, many years. And he would do that. He would take a verse or two and build on that. And he was very gifted in that. But that's not been the approach that I've taken. I'll try to deal with paragraphs, sometimes a whole chapter if it was cohesive.
Yeah. I think you could take smaller portions in Romans, especially certain sections, and that could be fruitful. But what I found is, listening to a lot of other sermons, or what happens when people just take like a third of a verse and they start doing that type of thing, you've cut the context down. You always right. need to be preaching in the immediate context,
yeah.
even if you're
yeah.
doing that. I get it. But sometimes when you cut it down that far, people free themselves to basically preach upon whatever they want.
Yeah, it becomes a springboard for
exactly.
their own agenda. And so, you know, it's interesting because Paul packs so much into, you know, so few words that you can be tempted towards a atomistic approach to the text. But
yeah.
I have been struck recently in reading through Paul, really the way in which Paul, structures a logical a train of logical argumentation so that when you get into the flow, it's becoming for me harder and harder to isolate verses from one another. And I'm finding that if I were to preach through certain books of Paul, I'd have to take larger pericopes than maybe I was inclined towards taking when I was younger, you know, where I was would have been much more inclined towards, you know, let me exegete these three words and, you know, break down their grammatical construction. Now I'm more taken with really the way in which, I mean, 1 Corinthians 12, 13, and 14, I mean, they all hang together. And you could preach, I mean, many sermons on those three chapters, but you can also preach one sermon on those three chapters because he's making an argument that goes on extensively for a long period of time. Uh-huh. And if you were to break it apart too much, you really do lose the train of thought that Paul is.
You ever done like an A and a B where you like preach a text and you always need to get at the main point in whatever text you've preached, but sometimes there might be some certain emphases you would like to draw out more than others.
Sure.
Have you ever preached the same text twice, like back to back weeks?
Yeah. Part one, part two.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
That works sometimes.
I did that extensively actually with Genesis. I'm preaching through Genesis in the morning and I've taken about 2 months or so to get through Genesis chapters 1 through 3. And those chapters kind of warrant it, you know, some, and then I'll pick up, you know, steam and such. But the way I've done it, rather than break it down into one or two verses, is I've taken the whole chapter and then I've preached multiple sermons on that chapter, highlighting different aspects of the chapter and some of the themes that come out. So, yeah, part one, part two, part three, part four, you know, stuff like that.
I think that works well.
Yep. And I think none of us probably feel that when we've completed a series like on Romans or Genesis that we've done justice to the...
Yeah,
to,
you're right. So much more.
You want to start over. You're like, well, yeah, I think I really understand this a little bit now.
There's one more time, this time with feeling.
Exactly. More cowbell.
Lord, in the evening I'm doing the shorter catechism, preaching from the shorter catechism, and then Lord willing after that I think Proverbs.
Nice. How are you going to do Proverbs? Because you just straight through could be tough.
Yeah.
It could be done. I'm just curious if are you planning just to work through Lectio Continuo until you're done?
Yeah, pretty much. But of course, Christ-centered.
Oh, yeah.
Approach. But yeah, at this point.
Come on. This is a Reformed Forum, Jeff. We know.
Unless
Christ the center.
That's right. But in terms of, I've got a few books that deal with this. It's a little book. I forget who the author is. I have on my shelf. Preaching, you know, Christ from Proverbs.
So. Oh, yeah. I'd like to see that. Because that's why I break Psalms up. I do about 4 to 6 Psalms in between series. And, and then, you know, the next time I get back to Psalms, I just pick up the next Psalm. And it's not because I don't think the people would like an extended series on Psalms, but some of it's personal too, but it's nice to do those in spurts because you get kind of this steady feed of them, but you also, perhaps it's just a sinful tendency, but you don't become wearied by them. You should never be wearied by God's word, but I don't know any other way to say this, but genre.
I understand.
If you did all 150 in a row for every Lord's Day, it could be tough.
Well, because there are Psalms that have similar concerns, that overlap.
Exactly.
For Sunday school, I'm going back and forth between the Psalms and the Heidelberg Catechism. So
nice.
You know, one Sunday
catechetical preaching.
Doing the so the evening is good, working through the shorter catechism, and then going back going to Proverbs and probably then after that a historical book. My goal always being to cycle through the kinds of books that are
right, you know,
the sections of the Old Testament and the New Testament.
Yeah, that's good. Well, you do that not only with your preaching, but maybe to come back to where we began with the discussion today, you do that with your own personal reading too, don't you?
Yeah, it's wanting to cover systematics, historical, biblical, and then commentary on the Old and the New Testament, and then, you know, secular literature, philosophy, history, you know, that kind of thing. I've been enjoying reading through the official biography of Winston Churchill.
I just got a biography of Churchill, but I don't think it's the one you're mentioning now. Do you know the author
Well, the official biography, which is 8 volumes plus 27 volumes of documentary stuff, is Sir Martin Gilbert.
Okay.
He wrote a 1-volume, version, but there's lots of good ones out there. But Gilbert is the one to. He passed away just recently.
Huh.
He taught. He was a, I guess, an adjunct professor at Hillsdale.
Yeah, there we go.
Because Larry Arn, who's the president of Hillsdale, was his research assistant back in the 70s.
My goodness.
They have that connection.
That's where Daryl Hart teaches now.
That's right. And Richard Gamble.
Yep.
The OPC is Richard Gamble, not the RPCNA.
Right. We have two, and they're both Richard C. Gamble.
Yeah, so it doesn't help us in the initial.
You have to gamble when you're trying to speak of the right one. Another bad joke for you. I think I better stop.
Yeah.
We should probably wrap this up because I don't think we could take 3 terrible jokes.
No, it's going downhill real quick.
Where do we want to point people today? Obviously, we want to go to reformforum.org and find out what we've been up to. But do you have any tips or tricks or any particular, asks of the listeners as we begin this year?
Well, there's a place for truth where some of my writing is occurring, which is an Alliance website.
Yeah.
They're just about starting a series on old Princeton. So keep that in mind.
Nice. Take a look at that. I think a lot of our listeners are probably already subscribed to that, but take a look at it nonetheless. Jim, any asks or things you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
Yeah, make a donation to Reform Forum.
Yeah, there we go.
I'll let you do it. I'll let you say it.
There you go.
Nice. Yeah, we had a big year last year in terms of giving. It was we received the greatest amount of gifts that we've ever received. So I do want to thank everybody for that. Yeah, praise the Lord.
Thank you, everyone. Much appreciated.
Some things.
And failing that, make a donation to South Austin Presbyterian Church.
Or Knox OPC.
Yeah.
Or Knox OPC, that's right.
Yeah. Grace Lake. Grace Lake.
We'll take it. Yeah, praise God.
Yeah, also, in all seriousness, I want to direct folks, if you – see, we talk a lot of theology here, which is great. It's awesome. But at the end of the day, we're here to serve the church, and theology without the church is an abstraction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to encourage folks to go check out opc.org. We have an excellent website and a website that will direct you, hopefully, to people, churches, particularly in your area, if you're not involved in an OP work already, or if you don't have already a reformed church that's preaching solid doctrine.
And NAPARC.org, too. Cross-reference NAPARC.org, NAPARC.org. Just for the listeners, because there's not always – of course, are all ministers in the OPC, so we – that's for
a reason.
I didn't
know NAPARC had a website, but that's great.
They do.
Yeah. Good. I mean, it's there.
The IRCs.
Right, and you can there isn't a unified search, which would be nice. It would be a little complicated to do, but – you can at least get to the church directories for all of the member denominations.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
But you're right. I mean, and that's an organization where there are many faithful Reformed denominations that have gathered together and try to encourage ecumenical relations in a way that we feel is most proper.
It's one thing to geek out on good Reformed theology. It's another thing to get in the church, right? To be involved in a confessionally reformed church, one that will bring honor to the Lord and will, of course, be for the building up of your own soul and such. And so commend that to our listeners.
Yeah, and people need to use their gifts and serve other people in the community too.
That's right.
And it needs to be done in the body of Christ. So it's not just that you need this, listener, but other people need you. And so it's good to get into the body, and that's do not forsake the assembly, the gathering together of the people of God, you know, and it's important. So, yeah, I appreciate that encouragement, Jim. We do exist as an organization to promote Christian education, I think, is our very abstract official government purpose, you know, on our documents. But we feel that we do that best by providing theological resources to the church so that they can use them personally, individually, but also corporately. But if we're not serving the church, then we really have no purpose and there's no reason for us to exist because theology must be done in the context of the church and in the service of the church and by people who are united together through the Holy Spirit and in our Savior Jesus Christ. So all of that to say check out NAPARC.org, check out OPC.org, and visit us online at reformedforum.org, where you'll find information about all of our programs and links to our various churches and projects and things that we're up to. If you'd like to get a hold of us, there's a contact page there where you can send us a message directly, as well as find out other ways to get a hold of us through social media, et al. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. We hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.